Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And today we are in our second part of our mental health series. So I did the last episode on men's mental health and rare diseases. Today's episode is on women's. And then the next one in June will be with a panel of LGBTQ plus advocates. So today we're joined by a great group of panelists. First, we have Charlene Marshall, who is a licensed mental health professional and a columnist for Pulmonary Fibrosis News. Charlene, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Kev.
Absolutely. And then we also have back to the show and one of our longtime columnists, Brianna Albers, the longtime columnist for SMA News Today and has been on the show before. Bree, thanks for coming back today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. And then we also have returning to the show, Gabrielle Runyon, who is a college student with SMA at the University of Louisville. She was on an episode earlier this year. Gabrielle, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And then lastly, we have Jesse Madrigal, who is a writer for endometriosis.net and a mental health advocate, and is first time to the show. So Jess, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much, Kev. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited for today. And again, this will be a roundtable discussion. So really excited to have you all. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so Charlene, we'll start with you. So as I mentioned in the intro, you are a licensed mental health professional. So, and then you were diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis in your late 20s. Can you talk about the relationship between those two parts of your identity and how having PF has influenced your work as a mental health professional?
Good question, Kev. I think being diagnosed with IPF and working in the mental health field, where we often see individuals and support individuals with a chronic illness and then how that impacts their mental health, I think I really can empathize with them a lot more clearly and a lot, you know, I really debated for a while whether or not I should share that part of my identity, that I'm also a chronic illness patient. And then really, I talked a lot to my superiors, supervisors, mentors, things like that, to ask if there would be a benefit versus a risk. And actually choosing to share that has really influenced and really been able to deepen the therapeutic relationship that I have with patients. And you know, there's lots that affect your own mental health living with a chronic illness patient. Sometimes whether it's brain fog that I deal with as a result of having IPF, or breathlessness when I'm talking, or a cough, sometimes that really impacts my confidence as a therapist. And so just being able to be really transparent and really upfront with the clients that I support enables just us to almost connect deeper, I would say, on a human to human level versus a therapist and a client relationship. And when that happens, there's a lot more, I would say, progress or even magic that can be made when someone's seeking support from you. So if that makes any sense, I think it's really, if I could summarize it, I think it would say it's just deepened the therapeutic relationship that I have with my clients, because I can really understand a lot of the internal and external struggles that they have when, you know, what they're seeking support for is connected to their chronic illness.
Absolutely. I think that's totally the case, and it just gives you this whole other level. So that's great. And then Bree, you also have a background in mental health, and it's something you've written about in your column. So how does what you studied in college and in grad school influence your approach to living with SMA?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I got my master's degree in community care, which is like mental health counseling for beginners. Because I had a dream of becoming a therapist. And then between you know, my SMA and the fatigue and everything, and my mental illness itself, I realized that I was just not up to doing full-time counseling. Like, I needed to look after myself, and I just wasn't in a place to really help others. But I really enjoyed my education because it helped put my own struggles into perspective. And I kind of learned how to be my own therapist, kind of. You know, like I can kind of work with my own feelings, and I internalized a lot of the just the practices that you learn in therapy. So that's been really helpful. And I think just having that perspective of a mental health professional has helped me kind of be my own therapist at times.
No, absolutely. I remember you did a series a while ago in your column about kind of like the scientific aspects of mental health and like utilizing what you learned in your degree there. And it was it was fascinating to learn because that was some of the stuff like I haven't really studied in depth. And so it was really cool to get that perspective, but absolutely. Well, thank you so much. And then Gabrielle, so you've written about and discussed your journey toward self-acceptance. Sorry, my brain's a little today because I had Spinraza. We talked about this a lot in your podcast interview, and you wrote about it in your 31 Days of SMA story. So can you talk about that journey and how you came to address your mental health and your identity?
Yes, I can. I think the first step for me was accepting it myself and accepting that I did need help and I couldn't like handle it on my own, or like not, like I have trouble opening up and telling my emotions to people. So like seeking help was kind of like nerve-wracking for me. So once that I accepted the fact that I needed help, then that helped with my journey to self-acceptance.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really fascinating too, like having that discussion with a lot of other people in the SMA community, is that like even people like us who constantly need help with, you know, little things, that it can be also really daunting to ask, particularly strangers, and to open up about that. So yeah, thank you, Gabrielle. And then Jess, you know, so you are also a strong mental health advocate, both in your writing and on social media. How does living with endometriosis coincide with your approach to mental health?
Well, I think it basically is, on the one hand, it's a disease that there's not much known about the disease. It still requires, we're still like way behind in terms of research, in terms of answers. And so when you're diagnosed, you basically are just, you're given a diagnosis, but then there's this gigantic question mark that just revolves around everything. I mean, suddenly it takes years. In my case, it took almost 2 decades to diagnose my disease. So throughout all those years, I just had symptoms that I had no answers for. I got the diagnosis, and then you have even more questions, even though you have this massive answer. It's a very unsettling disease emotionally. And then there's a really interesting aspect to it. There's a link to mental health and emotional health and trauma. So that is one of the lines of thought and one of the theories that has received a lot of attention during the last years. And I started writing I started oversharing and writing a lot about my own journey into caring about my mental health, mostly because of the endometriosis, because of my disease. And at first, when I found out about this possible link between trauma and endometriosis, my first reaction was to become well, first, I didn't want to hear about it. And as much as I've always been very open about my mental health, and anybody asking me any questions, I would say, well, I've had all these years of therapy, and I've had all these treatments. But I went into denial. And then because I am a survivor of sexual abuse and violence, my first reaction was like, no, I can't be a victim of all of this, and on top of it, get a chronic illness as a result. And then I started exploring that, and I started writing more and more about it. And the more I wrote about it, the more connected I felt with what was going on in my body and my physical symptoms, the more answers I got. And then it just sparked this conversation with so many people. Strangers started emailing me, people would message me on social media, and it just became something that I felt I had to do in a way to sort of give myself some of the power back, and but also to do something that I felt was necessary to do, which is to provide information and a voice in the area of mental health support, because there is none when it comes to treating the disease.
Thank you for sharing so much. And I think it brings up to a point about just like the stigma surrounding mental health. And I think they're still there in many ways, but it's also people are becoming more open. And I think that helps a lot, is like, once you know that you're not alone, it makes a really big impact. And Charlene, on that note too, of like, Jess was talking about that road to diagnosis. And so, you know, you actually started writing about PF not long after your diagnosis. Can you talk about the, like, how that, what, like, was it therapeutic for you, or like, what were the challenges associated with writing about something that was so new to you?
Yeah, great question. And Jess, thanks for sharing that, because that's a piece around the, you know, the trauma of going through a diagnosis, and oftentimes a trauma of being admitted to hospital and having no one really understand what's going on or why, just knowing that there's something wrong. That's such a, you know, a traumatic experience. And oftentimes I'm able to connect with clients more in depth again because of the trauma they've endured, and because of my own chronic illness journey and the trauma connected with trying to get a diagnosis. So thanks for flagging that, Jess. That is a piece that's so important to talk about. And I think in terms of what was helpful, as I even reflected on Jess's comment, I think starting to write about being diagnosed with IPF and not really having processed it, I think writing about it has helped me process the trauma about being diagnosed with, essentially without a lung transplant, chronic illness as a young adult. I really wasn't sure I wanted to write about it, because I almost felt like when I was diagnosed, I felt like I was just regurgitating someone else's sad story. Like, there was no emotion connected to it at all. When I was telling people after I got the diagnosis, and I was given the diagnosis, and because I was so young, both my doctors looked at me and said that they had no idea how my disease was going to progress. They didn't know if I would need oxygen in 5 years or 6 months. They just knew that, you know, my lungs would eventually fail. And so I went into denial and then started regurgitating that to someone else. And people would look at me and ask, you know, where my emotion was when I was explaining what my diagnosis was. And I think starting to write about it, despite my reluctance and a little bit of anxiety and a little bit of nervousness about writing, I think it helped connect the diagnosis and it happening to me. I think it helped bridge that gap and bring it together. So as hard as it was really helpful for me to be able to process that this is happening to me, not it's a diagnosis happening to someone else, which is the way I was kind of presenting it after I was diagnosed. And then the other piece in terms of, it also gave me a platform to share with people in an indirect way. It was really hard for me once I started processing the emotion of this happening to me and someone else and not someone else. It was really hard for me to then share it with people. So it was almost a platform to me to say, this is what's happening to me. Read about it as I process it and as I release information that feels good for me. And then similar to what Jess says, I started getting connected to a community that would contact me on social media, that would write and say that my words would really resonate with them. And suddenly it turned from poor me, this is happening to me, to I have an opportunity to help people. So I think writing about my experience in hindsight helped me more than I ever could have imagined in the time that I was nervous about writing about living with my, you know, living with my disease after my diagnosis, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think it's therapeutic, and it provides that connection. Cause I think, like, especially in your community, I know PF is more often associated with older patients, but you've proven you're not the only one out there who gets diagnosed at a young age. And I think it's so important for people to find other people in that same situation. You know, it's really cool. Absolutely. And then Gabrielle, speaking of like advocacy platforms, like, you know, so, you know, you've written about how, and you talked about earlier about like, you know, this used to be something, like just living with SMA was something you would have a hard time opening up about, but now, you know, you have a really big following on social media and you do a lot of advocacy there. And so can you talk about how that road from like self-acceptance to now has helped you become an advocate and a spokesperson for other people in the community?
I think it's helped me. Just speaking about it just helped me a lot, as well as helping others, like letting them know that they're not alone, like that I and so many other people go through the same thing, the struggle with mental health and mental illness. And yeah, just letting people know that they're not alone helps me like to be myself and open up to them on social media.
That's great. Absolutely. Well, this has been great so far. I want to thank you all. And before we continue, if everyone could please listen to another brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, thank you. And Bree, so shifting gears just a little bit, like another one of the main things you write about is your love of storytelling and how you strive for more disability representation in media, particularly fiction. Can you talk about how that love of storytelling has impacted your mental health and, you know, the stories you write in your fiction and other platforms?
I love this question. I really struggle with depression and just kind of digging through the day to day, and having something to focus on is such a huge help. I've found that focusing on, you know, my writing and networking with other writers and really pouring myself into every book that I write, it helps me feel less alone, and it also helps me feel like I'm helping other people. You know, I always say that my life would have turned out so much more different if I had seen like girls in wheelchairs in like TV shows and in movies growing up. And so knowing that, you know, if I do publish a book someday, I will be doing that for someone else. You know, someone 10 years from now might read my book and see themselves in it. And that's huge. And it really helps me because, you know, and when you're writing or when you're working on any sort of creative project, you don't really know how it's going to end up or how it will affect people, but just knowing that there's a possibility that I can help someone or that I can change a life is just huge.
Oh, I'm with you all the way there. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize the power that fiction and media representation has. And like you said, when you see yourself reflected in a story, it makes such a huge impact. And, you know, and I know your books will be on the shelves one day. So we'll make it, it'll open up doors for so many other stories about disabled characters and wheelchair users and everything else. So absolutely. And just like kind of along those lines too. So you write primarily about, you know, chronic illness, women's issues, Madonna, of course, and many other topics and mental health. And so, and can you talk about kind of how these different subjects intersect and how you recognize those different aspects of your identity?
Yeah, well, I think that when I was very, very little, I think it was eight around. Yeah, when I was eight, one of my school teachers stopped my mom at a parents teacher meeting, and she basically said that told my mom that I had a really had written she'd given us some sort of activity, and I'd written a story and about magical horses and something like that, and my teacher told my mom that I had a really active and creative imagination. So writing has always been a part of my identity ever since I was a little girl. And it's kind of, I think it's in a way, I link it up to what Brie was saying. When you live with a chronic illness, there is an element of isolation. There is a huge element of feeling very lonely. And I'm somebody who, you know, I've got friends all over the globe. I think I'm a really good friend. I'm somebody who seeks out to support others. I like going out if I can go out, and I'm quite sociable, but a lot of the time, you know, the one thing that comes with chronic illness and that I feel a lot is this feeling of isolation. And so writing has always been a way of sort of bridging that gap between me and the world, and sort of. So yeah, so I would write about anything. If I write about Madonna, which is a childhood hero of mine, and it's my, like, she's my comfort blanket, especially, you know, early Madonna, because it just links to my childhood. I will write about that. And all of my writing, everything I do, even when I write about a disease as cruel and as unfair as endometriosis, there's always a bit of humor. There is always some pop reference. There is always a part of me that comes through. I can't write about my disease in a monotone, non-funny, non-angry, it's raw, it's honest. And I think that because of that, in a way you're seeking connection, you're seeking sort of a way outside of the, like, if you're recovering from surgery or you're having a horrible flare-up or you're suffering from mobility issues, it gives you that window to the outside. And I think that that's what I do with my writing. It's I'm interested and I'm really into a lot of things. Mental health is definitely like one of the things that I always weave into everything that I write. And yeah, it is definitely part of who I am and part of my identity. You read about me, you get to know me. Yes, definitely.
No, absolutely. It's, I mean, I know people like you, me and Brie, we have all that approach to, right? I mean, like with the sites we write for, it's, I think like our disabilities and our chronic illnesses intersect with so many other areas of our lives that in our writing, all aspects of our personalities are going to show. So yeah, absolutely. Well, so first of all, I want to thank you all for coming on today. And just kind of in this last part, I just want to ask you all if you have any advice for others listening, particularly women in rare disease and disability communities, those who maybe be struggling with their mental health or how to approach it or where to start. So Charlene, we'll start with you.
You know, the first thing that went to my head, Kev, when you asked that question was, I would tell someone that the sky's the limit. You're not defined by you know, your chronic illness, sure, there's limitations, but there are, you know, there are people out there who are willing to help you and who have been through the same experience and who are still, despite their chronic illness, still living their, you know, the life that they dreamed, or a modification of the life that they dreamed that's still as fulfilling and still as meaningful as they had hoped for one day. So I think my one piece of advice, two pieces, but I think my first one would be, you know, don't let your chronic illness define you. I know it's hard. And, you know, sometimes there's has to be roundabout ways to getting where you want to be that you might not have thought you had to navigate, but it's still possible. And then my second piece is to just, as I know Jess touched on it and I touched on it a little bit, about the connections you can make when you connect with other people who are living the same experience as you with your chronic illness. So I think my other piece of advice would be, like, don't try to navigate this alone, whether it's an online community, whether it's literally someone else you know in person or maybe just online, you know, reach out and get support, because there really is strength in numbers, especially when it comes to mental health.
Absolutely. I love that. And then Gabrielle, any advice? Yeah. And you can also speak to other college students out there.
The advice I would give would to be just to be open with yourself and just accept that you do have a problem at first, because as a college student, like, they kind of make it seem normal to be stressed out and like staying up till 3 a.m. doing homework and all that. But that's not normal. It's not normal to feel anxious all the time. So, like, first recognizing that you have a problem and seeking help, because that's what helped me, is actually seeking help and getting treatment for my anxiety.
That's great. And no, I mean, I loved my college experience, but I do always love when they try to say, like, you know, okay, have a social life, do a million classes, do a million extracurriculars. Like, it's totally normal. Like, I love that you said that, but like, no, you have to treat yourself as human and recognize, like, when you're too stressed and when you need to take care of yourself. Absolutely. And then Bree, what about you?
I think just echoing what the others have said, you know, definitely don't be afraid to acknowledge and recognize that things are tough. Like, it took me so long to get to the point to be like, yeah, I do have anxiety, and yeah, I do have depression. And once I did that, it got actually easier, because I wasn't just trying to deny it or trying to pretend that I wasn't struggling. So that definitely, and then, you know, just finding other people to do life with. And I definitely recommend trying to find people with your disease, because no one knows your situation better than the other people who are living with the same condition that you are. And I think that having that solidarity and that understanding can just be significant and really help you feel that, you know, so you're not so isolated and that you can draw support from other people.
That's great. I love that. And then Jess, what about you?
Yeah, I think finding a community is key. I think that is what, you know, mostly what everybody has been mentioning, reaching out and connecting to others. There is a support group for absolutely almost everything now these days, online especially, and it made a massive difference in my after diagnosis, especially when no doctors had any satisfying answers other than, well, I'm not a specialist, I can't treat you, you know, I don't know much about the disease, blah blah. I think finding a community, and even if it's just somebody that you, social media is brilliant for this, but if you see somebody online that you identify with, that they mention that they have your same illness, or that they mention that they struggle with the same anxiety, levels of anxiety, or other sort of mental health issues that you have, reach out to them. Because sometimes, you know, our communities or our surroundings, you know, everybody's dealing with their own thing, and then not everybody will know, especially if it's a rare disease, not everybody will know how to support you or offer support. And I think we have to sort of become our best advocates in that respect, not only to find effective treatment for the symptoms that we're having that come with our chronic illnesses, but also for the mental health struggles that are going to come with living with our chronic illnesses. And I think that there is no shame. There is, honestly, like, I can't stress this enough. And I think that it still breaks my heart that talking about our mental health is something that is still considered a risky thing to do on a public platform. But honestly, there's no shame. We all, every single person on this planet at this point, at any point, would benefit from some sort of support to deal with events, life events, changes, diagnosis. It's like going to the dentist. We should do in the same way that we check our teeth, we should be checking our mental health. And be your own advocate in that respect. If a diagnosis, if a doctor, if a situation is contributing to your anxiety, is giving you, you know, nightmares, heart palpitations, difficulty in breathing, if you're shaking way too much, ask for help. Find somebody that you feel safe, somebody that makes you feel comfortable, and tell them about what's going on.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you all so much for coming on this today. This has been a really great discussion, and I will put links to all your work in the description, but is there anything you want to plug? Obviously, I've got your columns and everything, but anywhere people can find you if they want to reach out and see more of your work. Well, I will definitely plug all your website, social media, but I want to thank you, Jarlene, Jess, Bree, Gabrielle. I want to thank you all so much for coming on today. This has been a really great discussion, and I appreciate you all sharing your experiences. This is even really, I think, impactful for a lot of people. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.